Tales from the Trenches, stories forged in the fires of experience.
Any kind of regional or more national size supermarket has looking at how can they manage the refrigerant better. And they're also, which is another effect of this regulation, they're also looking at natural refrigerants, specifically CO2 and some propane. And I think that's a big effect. Like the 15 pounds, it's a big request. A lot of companies don't even know where their 15-pound refrigerants are.
This episode is brought to you by Madelex and Tops Markets, pioneers in refrigeration management and sustainability. Madelex, based in Paris, France, offers cutting-edge solutions for real-time leak detection and energy management, helping businesses improve refrigeration performance while reducing environmental impact. Tops Markets, with 148 stores across New York and the Northeast, is leading the grocery industry in adopting eco-friendly refrigerants like so and ensuring compliance with evolving regulations. Learn more at matelex.com and topsmarkets.com.
Well, hello, everyone. Thank you for joining us once again on Did You Know the ESCO HVAC Podcast. So today we're going to spend a little bit of time with David Reitz from Madelex and Ron Smith from Tops Market talking about changes that we've seen, particularly in the commercial refrigeration sector over the last year or so, particularly things that came out of the AIM Act and some of the things that we'll be looking at going into 2025. Now, for those of you who aren't aware, I spent quite a bit of my career as a grocery refrigeration technician. And of course, we did a lot of refrigerant management. We did a lot of refrigerant tracking. We had automated refrigerant detection systems in all of our facilities. And most of the time, we really focused on our refrigerant leak documentation once we hit that 50-pound systems, right? That's always kind of been the tradition. But during the course of like the AIM Act, we've seen some changes in regulation, particularly in that commercial sector, in that 15 to 50-pound. There really did some changes in the industry that not everyone is aware of. So Ron, do you mind kind of talking us through a little bit of how that affected the grocery refrigeration industry?
Yeah, currently we track all systems that are over 50 pounds refrigerant, and we have many rooftop condensing units, HVAC units that have different stages that we have to now track anything that's between 15 and 50 pounds. So we have to gather and collect all the data for that, all of that equipment that's on the roof to make sure that we have accurate data to not only report on, but track and educate our refrigeration providers that they need to track any refrigerant use that's in those. So by per location, it's between 1 and 2 hours per location to collect that information. Then we need to enter all of that data into our tracking system. And once that's into the tracking system, then there's a whole education piece on the service provider side. We have 9 different service contractors that we also need to educate to make sure that they are following the policies and programs. Because as the end user, we are responsible for the information and the tracking and the data, but we really rely on our service providers to collect and manage that data to give to us to make sure that we're accurate.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, in the past, when we were looking at those larger systems, we had any leaks particularly, then it became a, you know, all right, it's time to document, let's do our leak rate follow-ups, let's do our leak inspection follow-ups. And we didn't have as many of those. I had one in particular. I had an R22 medium temp rack at one of our facilities, and it was an older system, had 1,400 pounds of R22. It had had a significant repair early in the year, but in the middle of winter, it had had a contractor replaced a valve plate on one of the 2D Copelands and didn't torque all the head bolts down properly. And so we got a call on a Saturday morning that the rack blew a head gasket and dumped 1,400 pounds of R22. Which, you know, triggered our leak rate threshold. And so immediately we're starting to document. So it was understood that we did that on our larger systems, but now that we're talking about smaller systems down to 15 pounds, that kind of changes the ballpark. And it moves it from just our racks that we pretty much, you know, paid attention to previously to a lot of our smaller equipment. So what kind of ways have we relooked at the industry, and what types of tracking have we and monitoring have we started looking at for these types of systems?
We currently use a service channel tracking, refrigerant tracking system for monitoring the systems. Anytime that there is refrigerant usage, it goes into that system. We track it. We track any leak in any system. And now that with this new regulation, we've gone to anything that holds refrigerant. So we're collecting the information, make, model, serial number, charge size for anything that holds refrigerant, loading it into that system so that we are, once complete, we'll have full view of everything that we have, any refrigerant that's used. So if there are any changes down the road on recording, we'll have it all. And it's truly is very difficult for us to capture all of that data because we've got stores that were new build ground up. That's an easy capture. Stores that aren't that old, but then we've got some very old stores. We've grown in size as a chain by acquisitions. We've acquired some very old systems. There's no nomenclature data. Sometimes even the manufacturer is hard to find on the equipment. So trying to capture all of that data accurately so that we're compliant is a challenge.
Yeah, absolutely. So David, you spend some time on that whole regulatory side and things that could possibly change. You know, we get a lot of comments from the industry. Oh, well, this new administration comes in January 2025, they're just going to reverse the AIM Act and we're going to go back to using R22 and A1 refrigerants and it's going to be a whole new world. And that is just absolutely not the case. Now, there are some things that can be reviewed by the new administration that have happened in a short window of time that could potentially be changed, but there are a lot of things that are absolutely set in stone. So what things do you see that happened out of the AIM Act are absolutely going to stay, and what things could potentially be relooked at by a new administration?
Yeah, so the three kind of main components of the AIM Act, one is the phase down of HFC refrigerants,
right,
which has been codified. There's a defined schedule. It has been approved for years, and they've already started to phase down the amount of new refrigerant and refrigerant that's allowed to be circulated.
Absolutely.
That is codified, will not change. So expectations are, with supply and demand, prices of HFCs will continue to increase over time.
Absolutely.
So that's codified, it's in. Second, they did a big push to have codes to allow for different types of refrigerants, like, and low GWP, low global warming potential refrigerants that are natural refrigerants, CO2, which is high pressure, propane, which has a little bit of flammability. They had to redo the codes, building codes and whatnot, to allow for these to be built. That has been codified and is in.
And all the A2Ls.
Yes, all the A2Ls, correct. The third portion is the management portion. It was passed, the codes were published on September 23rd. And there's a congressional look back window,
right,
that if the administration controls presidency, the House, and the Senate, they can look at rules that were passed within a certain period of time, which this rule, this EPA rule, was passed during that time.
Sure.
So if they look at it, it's one of the top 10 costly rules that have been passed from a regulatory standpoint. So it's very costly, mainly because of the requirement to get down to 15 pounds of reporting. And so the administration, the Trump administration in the past, has actually reduced regulatory costs. They have, when they, their 4 years, they reduced by $100 million regulatory costs, where other administrations, it's usually more of a cost. So likely they will take a hard look at this. And, you know, my view is that they could nullify it. So it has to be approved by the House and the Senate, mm-hmm. and then it has to be nullified by the president. So there's a likelihood that could happen. And if it does, those rules will no longer apply. And it's a long, long road to get back to that.
Sure.
So, but there's other things going on, and Ron could speak to this. There's a lot of states are coming up with similar rules, which makes kind of this patchwork regulatory system that are as stringent or more stringent than this AIM Act regulatory rule.
Sure. Well, I think about that, you know, from an end user perspective. Ron, I'm sure you've invested tons of capital and tons of time into creating a reporting and management system for these systems down to 15 pounds. So even if by code it was nullified and reversed, where it wasn't required by code or by law, many of our end users like yourself have invested so much time into this, you're probably going to continue using that as a business model, even though it's not really would at that point be required. Well, am I assuming that would be true?
Yes. That the amount of time that we'll have in this ruling goes into effect, that tracking 15 pounds goes into effect 1/1/26 is when the reporting starts.
Yes.
So by the time they were to nullify it, we would already be so far into all of the preparation for tracking it.
Exactly.
To turn back, it would be a waste of that time and energy. And with the increased cost of HFCs, anything that we can do to track and prevent leaks not only is great environmentally, but it's also a financial win also. So really, to turn back on it at this point would be a lost investment, largely, you know, full salaried employees that we've put into this, the role to make sure that this is taken care of, plus the investment we've made with our refrigeration contractors.
Yeah.
And on the flip side of that, we actually are in New York State, vastly in New York State. We cover three states in the Northeast, mostly in New York State. The regulations coming from the New York State DEC that are not finalized yet, but there will be some sort of finalization of rules in New York State are more stringent than the EPA rules. So we will have to track it anyhow. You know, even if it does get nullified in the EPA version, the state version will be more difficult than what the EPA is.
Exactly. You know, David and I, we've talked previously about refrigerant management and tools that are being used for tracking and monitoring refrigerant use. You know, as a larger company, have you invested a lot into software and in for hardware for monitoring systems? Are we relying solely on that service technician for doing the initial documentation of refrigerant usage?
Yeah, we have a mixed bag. We have made some investments in leak detection, not as much in the automatic leak detection side. That's, you know, we're working with Madelex on a pilot program. There are a lot of different companies out there that are offering that, you know, AI-based leak detection model. But we've found that many are newer or startup. And, you know, Madelex version, we actually is proven. They've been using it overseas for so long. We really like the data, what we saw, and the availability. We have a lot of different EMS systems. It doesn't have to interface with our EMS. So it doesn't matter what we have in the store. We can use that system. So we've taken some time to really try to make sure that we are going with the right system that's going to be all-encompassing for all of our locations. So we're one step in, one toe into the pool with that to really be able to cover the whole chain.
Exactly. So, David, companies like Tops Markets and others that have been diving into the refrigerant tracking, have you seen quite a bit of an increase in, especially in our larger suite users, investing into refrigerant monitoring technology in preparation of these changes?
Yeah, I would say any kind of regional or more national size supermarket has looking at how can they manage the refrigerant better. And they're also, which is another effect of this regulation, they're also looking at natural refrigerants, specifically CO2 and some propane. And I think that's a big effect. Like the 15 pounds, it's a big request. A lot of companies don't even know where their 15 pound refrigerants are.
And like just, what equipment is that?
Yeah. It could be anywhere. And it's so. And the other thing is the fines are big. It's like $30,000 to $60,000 a day if there's a leak and you're not reporting on it. And it's a big fine. But although, and this is another effect of a new administration, they can take budgets away from doing the fines and doing, you know, the follow-up on the report.
The regulatory side.
Yeah, and likely that will happen. But so for the 15 pounds, it says unless it's 53 GWP or under, then you do not have to do EPA reporting. And same with automatic leak detection. If it's 53 GWP or lower, 53 GWP... there's no HFC that makes that limit.
Absolutely.
So basically the rule is saying, and the view on the management, it says, one, we want to see you in natural refrigerants. Two, we want to know everything you're doing. We're going to go down to 15 pounds. We want a heavy look into this. And then three, automatic leak detection, because we're pushing on this, is only for the biggest systems, even though there's, on a business standpoint, just a pure business view, there's more ROI out of automatic leak detection than doing reporting. You know, there is some, you can get some good knowledge out of reporting, but down to 15 pounds, there's more ROI if you're doing that. But the current rule does not push too hard on that. It pushes very hard on administrative reporting and knowledge of what the systems are. So, but that's, I think, another part of it. It's really this natural refrigerant, which it's got some really good, you know, things about it. It has some drawbacks, you know, there's a balance and everything, but it's definitely a push in that direction.
Yeah, absolutely. As you know, as we're really on this slide down the HFC phase down, we really initiated it in January 22. We've already made two major stepping stones. We're at a 40% reduction already. So we're going to quickly be moving away from HFC refrigerants. And this is another component that pushes the industry into our low GWP refrigerants. But like I said, unfortunately, we really don't have a lot of options at the minute. We've seen a lot of CO2 being brought into new construction, into remodeling. The things like R290 and R600s are only in small quantities. We'll probably never see these in our very high capacity refrigeration systems, at least not indoors. So we're really kind of limited on the options. So there's going to be a lot of equipment still in use getting monitored throughout this entire period. So we're going to see a growth of the refrigerant management and monitoring throughout this entire HFC slide. It was really what it feels like. It's a very quick slide that is not only getting impacted by the phase down schedule, but by legislation like this and things like the technology transition rule and states and local jurisdictions that are moving to even lower, tighter GWP limits and restrictions on high GWP refrigerants. So we're going to continue seeing a lot of change within the industry. And so many of our technicians moving into the commercial refrigeration sector, they may not be aware of these changes and the requirements for tracking all of this refrigerant. So Ron, when you have third-party companies as service contractors, what is that training and what is the requirements for those contractors when they're working with the end user like yourself for equipment? Because I know, like for myself, you know, I had all of my own stores that I monitored, but we also had on-call rotations that we had third-party vendors come in doing repairs, especially for emergency work. And in the past, you'd go in, you'd fix things and you'd tell your end user what was repaired and how much refrigerant you used. But I can see that that's probably starting to change a little bit now that we're getting into much tighter tracking.
Yeah. Yes. So we started out with meetings and training with the leadership and the refrigeration partners and our contractors, followed that with meetings with their technicians, you know, one-on-one meetings, group meetings individually with their technicians. And then while we're on site in locations, having those conversations with technicians so that it's kind of an all-encompassing message. We made it so that without proper leak records reported, the contractors can't invoice. So the work that they did will hold up and they will not be able to invoice it through our system until the leak records are entered. And then we can verify those leak records based on the, you know, the amount of pounds that were billed, information that we have from the locations. So we are able to kind of force the hand of making sure that we have the data that we need before contractors get paid. With the transition to natural refrigerants, it's really, and you know, the whole purpose of all of this ruling is to eliminate the HFCs and go to natural refrigerants and help our environment. So with that, it's changed the way that we look at when we repair a system. If we've got a rack with a bad suction header, that's a large expense to try to repair that. We're not just repairing that suction header. We're looking at, can we go to self-contained cases? Can we change the condensing units with a lower GWP? The availability of CO2 condensing units and repiping in new cases. So it takes the cost of a repair that at one point in time was $90,000. Now we're spending $180,000
in
capital expenditure to do that, which has a ripple effect on our remodel budgets and all of the different things we do. our remodel costs have significantly increased because we're trying to do the right thing for the legislation. So it really takes a large effect that we've had to educate our leadership, you know, the upper management in our company, the stakeholders in the company, to understand not only the immediate impacts and what it takes in labor and manpower to be able to monitor this, but then what it's going to do to future planning.
So. Yeah, that's a big one. When we start looking at forecasting, you know, even in all the way down to the residential, we've had so many changes in equipment and regulations that, you know, many of our, especially multifamily companies that are looking at projecting, it's not like it used to be in the past. You know, you might account for a, you know, maybe a 7%, maybe a 10% increase in cost of goods for the following year, especially due to inflation. But now that we're talking about additional regulations, additional software, additional time, even for the technician for doing the tracking of those repairs and entering in those reports, it's a significant impact to the industry that not everyone is completely aware of. So I really appreciate having these conversations and helping people understand, you know, what that looks like and what changes have happened in that commercial refrigeration. Because we always say, you know, it's a lot of this legislation starts with the larger equipment and eventually trickles itself down and inevitably into smaller pieces of equipment. So it's a, you know, it's changed the way that we look at refrigerant and leak repairs than what we have in the past. What do we see for 2025 from either one of you? What do you see as challenges or things that we will be preparing for 2025 that may look a little bit different than what we've seen in 2024?
I think like Topps Market is, you know, they're a leader. They're out in front. They've thought about this. They've invested. They've educated, you know, the management and have prepared for change. And even with that, as you mentioned, budgets are higher. You know, food, inflation of food is a consideration. And, you know, supermarkets are not the biggest margin business. So exactly. I think it's going to be focused on doing things efficiently. And the bigger supermarkets, too, I think are well prepared. I think that there's a concern for smaller to mom and pops. Are they ready? Are they ready? Like the bigger supermarkets actually have banked a lot of HFC for, they're ready for a few years of, you know, phasing out. And smaller supermarkets haven't budgeted. They're kind of learning about it. I think about it as there's Topps Market that's well prepared, but will still have to be efficient about how they do things because it's important. I think there's smaller ones that, and medium size that are not prepared. And there is some concern of, you know, there's these food deserts and some of these small mom and pops are servicing areas that don't have a lot of, you know, availability. And so there is concern, a little bit of concern about availability, but we'll see. There's a little bit of unknown, as we said, in the administration, how they do enforcement or don't do enforcement, if they nullify the one rule or not. So there's a little bit of unknown, which will clear up early on in 2025. They have to nullify within a certain amount of days. So that will be figured out early in 2025. And I think it's going to be, there is automatic leak detection makes sense. I think that's going to be implemented, but in an efficient way, super important. And then there's others that are going to still have to try to deal with because the prices are going to continue to go up. So it's kind of bifurcate into those two different areas.
I agree. I know my biggest concern in that commercial refrigeration sector is those small and medium size grocery stores, those mom and pop shops that have been operating 134A and R22 coolers and R404 freezers for decades. And when they have leaks, they have their local technician come out and repair them and recharge systems. And that scenario is not going to be possible going forward due to leak requirements as well as cost of those HFCs, especially those high GWP HFCs going forward. So gentlemen, I really appreciate both of you hanging out with us today. I hope everyone has a much broader understanding of changes that are happening in our industry and are aware that there's going to be changes to come, and stay tuned, and we appreciate you all hanging out today.
Thank you, Clifton. Appreciate it.
Thank you.